friends and only you judge me.
I am eight.
Hello, mate.
I am eight.
I am eight.
Hello, mate.
I remembered.
So we're still not bothering pre-recording this bit then, I'll take it.
You're only 43 episodes in. How many do you need to get this bit right?
It's great fun.
While we're on the subject of this I am eight, right?
Yeah.
I said to Vicky the other day, if this podcast hadn't already been created by you, you know what I think I would have called it if I'd have done it myself?
Go on.
I am it. It just fitted the other day when I was thinking. It just comes to me.
So, hi, mate, or follow the dream?
Yeah.
I think follow the dream's better, mate. Hi, mate, sounds weird, doesn't it? Hi, mate, featuring Jordan.
Plus, would you remember the name of the episode every week? Because you forget how to do it every week.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not my fault. I've got brain damage.
Oh, dear.
Right, on that note, then.
I thought it was going to be a joke, that.
I'll tell you what we have done, though.
Go on.
A few weeks ago, we did the interview that we've promised people, didn't we?
Nice save. Well done.
At least I remembered that.
So go on, tell us all about this interview.
So we interviewed a lovely man named Dave Pemberton, and he's worked with artists such as Beverly Knight, the Spice Girls, and the Prodigy.
Yeah, and how did this come about then?
My lovely co-host, Kevin, introduced me to this equally lovely man, David Pemberton.
Okay, and what sort of prep did you do before you got to go and do this interview then? Tell me how this all worked out for you.
Well, prep. Did we do any prep?
Yes, I did.
Did you? Oh, cool. What did you do then?
I googled some of the albums.
You googled Dave Pemberton?
I googled some of the albums that he'd worked on, and he worked on the Spice Girls' first album, which was called Spice, which I'm shameful of owning.
Are you actually a fan of the Spice Girls, by the way?
What's wrong with it?
Oh dear. Awful. The production was great, though.
Yeah, we have to say that.
Yeah.
No, so it was a good interview. You did well. You did a bit of research. You did a bit of Googling.
Fun fact.
Go on.
You know the song, Say You'll Be There, by the Spice Girls? That's where David Beckham saw the video of Victoria and said, I want to marry her. That's where he found her.
Right.
Did you know that?
Yes, I think I did.
Do you, Andrew?
I remember a couple of the Spice Girls going to Old Trafford at some point, and that's where he first met her, I believe.
Yeah. That actually reminds me of a story, you know, about Michael Caine, how he met his wife.
Yeah.
Michael Caine in the early 60s, he was watching a coffee advert, and his now wife came out in the advert, and he's like, I really like her, and thought she was Colombian or something. So he said to his manager, can you find out who that girl is? I'm going to Colombia. I want to meet her.
Right.
And he turns out, and he said, well, no, she's not from Colombia. She's from London. She looks Colombian, but she's from London, and she lives on the old Kent Road or something. I'll introduce you tomorrow.
Wow.
And that's how he met his wife.
Oh.
And I can't remember her name. It's a very famous couple.
Oh, right.
Michael Caine and Andrew, can you remember a name at all?
Nope.
Oh, well, that's how he met his wife anyway. Anyway, we digress. What about the interview?
So moving on swiftly, should we play the interview?
Yeah.
Oh, we're going straight to it?
Yeah.
All right, here it is.
Hi, Dave, how you doing, mate?
Good, thanks.
Good to see you. Long time no see.
Yeah, long time.
And thanks for having us here today.
Thank you, Dave.
No worries.
And, of course, this is young Jordan, who's a bit of a mad fan for music, aren't you, mate?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been into music for a long time. And
who's your favourite artist?
I like the Spice Girls.
I'll tell you something. I recorded the vocals on the first Spice Girls album.
Spice?
I recorded the vocals for the first album.
Did you?
Yeah.
which was
To Become One, I did that.
Yeah.
Wannabe, I did that.
Did you do any of the videos?
Nah.
No?
No, Dave's a sound. He's a sound producer.
Right. I did. I recorded the vocals on the demos.
Yeah.
And some of those vocals ended up on the album. Oh. Some of them they re-recorded them, but some of the ones I did ended up on the album.
Yeah. And how did you in the field that you're in now? How did you get there?
So I used to play bass guitar in a band when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I realised I wasn't good enough.
Right.
And so I saw a documentary on Brian Eno recording the Unforgettable Fire album with U2.
Yeah.
And I watched that video and I thought, that's what I want to do. I want to work in a studio.
Yeah.
And so I researched it a bit. I found out at Salford Tech, they did a course 2 years. It was the only one in the country at the time, in 1988.
Right.
So I went off, packed my job in, went off to Salford Tech, did 2 years studying sound engineering. And then I moved to London and got a job in a big studio in London. Yeah. And after that, the rest is history. My first job was in a place called Jacob's Studio in Surrey.
Yeah.
And I was still in my final year at college. And they phoned me up at Easter, it was, in my final year, and said, you got to come down, you start this weekend. I was like, right, I'll be there. So on Friday, I got turned down to Farnham in Surrey, in the middle of, didn't have a clue where I was going. I was on my own, first time I'd ever been to London. And changed trains in London, got a train out to the middle of nowhere in Surrey. Farnham's like a very country town, it's literally in the middle of nowhere. And I phoned up the studio, said, right, I'm here at the station. He said, right, we'll pick you up in half an hour. So some guy turned up to pick me up. I got to this place, beautiful farmhouse in the middle of the countryside, swimming pool outside, and it was a residential studio. And the Cure were just finishing their album. They were having an end of album party.
did you say the Cure?
The Cure. About the Cure.
Proper Northern came out there. So Cure.
The day I arrived, the Cure. Yeah, we're having the. I can't remember which album it was now.
I can't remember. But are they a Manchester band?
No, they're from down that way. They're from Surrey.
Right.
Or London. They're a London band, really.
Great band.
In Between Days. Remember that?
Yeah.
I think that was the album. What was that video where they're all in the elevator?
That was the album anyway.
He just finished that album.
Yeah.
And they were having a party and it was like, I've arrived, I'm in the rock and roll business.
That's it.
There was girls, there was everything you could ever want. And I was like, this is it, I've arrived, I'm in the music business.
Yeah.
Awesome. But now you're back in Manchester.
So then I moved back up to Manchester a few years back. Just because the music industry is decentralised these days. London's, you don't have to be in London anymore.
Yeah, but where would you rather be, Manchester or London? Which?
I miss London a bit.
Yeah.
But I don't miss the prices.
No. Who does?
That's the problem. Mm-hmm. And the music industry in London is not what it was in the 90s.
No.
Back then, there was like 100 studios, like top-level studios in London. Now there's a handful, there's five or six. So and it's spread out. You don't have to be in London anymore.
Yeah,
Manchester's a big music scene. Though,
Manchester's the biggest music city outside of London, I'd say. Arguably bigger than London these days for new talent, I think.
Yeah.
That was just on my mind. You were talking about Manchester. Do you know when the Manchester movement was happening?
Yeah.
Where were you? Were you involved in?
I'm just about at the start of it. I used to go down the Hacienda every Friday night, watch Mike Pickering and Graham Park DJing. I went to Spike Island, saw the Stone Roses.
Oh, yeah.
But I moved to London by the time Oasis had formed.
Right.
That's a funny story. When I was at this residential studio, Jacobs, the Inspiral Carpets were coming in.
Oh, are they?
And I got a phone call Sunday night. Someone coming in, dropping all the gear off for tomorrow's session.
Yeah.
So Sunday night, about 10 o'clock, this mank geezer to big bushy eyebrows turns up.
Yeah.
I come to drop off the gear for Inspiral Carpets, and it was Noel.
Oh, and, Noel Gallagher?
Yeah. So I let him in, helped him unload the van and all that. I didn't know who he was at the time.
Oh.
Sat there and I said, do you want a coffee? He was driving back to Manchester with the empty van. I was like, do you want a coffee before you set off? So I made him a cup of coffee and we sat and had a chat for a bit. He's like, I'm in a band, I'm going to be massive. I was like, yeah, I've heard that before. Every roadie in the country says that.
Whoa.
And a year later, I was like, that's that geezer.
I found out that you've worked with a band called The Prodigy.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know whether you've had any involvement with this particular album I've got in mind, Fatter Than Land. Do you know anything about that?
Did a little bit on it, not much. My friend Neil McClellan did most of Fatter Than Land.
Yeah.
And I was, most of the time they were doing that, I was next door in the other studio. They did a lot of it at Strong Room.
Right.
And they were in Studio 1 and I was in Studio 2 next door. So I was hanging out on their sessions a lot. I did a little bit. I recorded the guitars for Firestarter.
Oh.
One day, that was one day, Liam came in. And I've known Liam since before Part of the Land, since the first album, really.
Yeah. And, also, that wasn't the first album then?
No, first album is Project Experience.
Right.
Charlie was the first single, Out of Space.
Yeah.
But you know, they sampled the old reggae tune.
Oh, yeah.
That was off the first album. And then I was working with my friend Neil McClellan and a DJ called Carl Cox. We were doing a gig in Cardiff in Wales.
Yeah.
And Prodigy were on the bill.
Yeah.
And that's when I first met Prodigy.
Right.
Neil and Liam got on really well in the dressing room. I was Neil's engineer at the time and he was a producer.
Yeah.
So him and Liam from Prodigy hooked up and started working on Prodigy tunes from then on. Right. But I was the engineer sometimes. Other times I wasn't. And so that day they came in to record a bunch. They brought the guitarist in. And Liam had a load of beats on a DAT tape.
Yeah.
So we played the beats and the guitarist just jammed over the top of them.
Right.
We recorded it all back to a DAT tape and Liam took that away and sampled off all the bits he wanted. And that's where the Firestarter guitar bit came from.
Oh, yeah.
That session that day.
There was a question I wanted to ask you. Have you ever, perhaps missed out on an opportunity to work with someone and then thought, oh, I wish I'd have worked
took
with someone.
Took that gig or something, yeah.
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 You know, I don't turn down many gigs. The only one I turned down was Pete Doherty.
Oh.
Someone phoned me up and said, are you sure you want to do this?
Yeah.
He's a mess. And he told me what had been going on, the guy whose job I was replacing.
Who's Pete Doherty? Remind me.
Baby Shambles.
Baby Shambles.
And what's his other band called?
Not something I listen to, that.
And so it was one of his solo records, and it was at a studio in Henley on Thames.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful studio right on the river.
Yeah.
And my management at the time advised me, you don't want to be doing this. He's taking a lot of drugs. It's a mess. Right? And the other guys left because nothing was getting done.
Yeah.
So I had another offer on at the time, so I said, no, I turned it down. And I didn't regret it because a week later I heard that he'd driven his car into the river. The studio where I would have gone to.
Jesus.
No, but he trashed the studio and he ended up with his hire car going in the river.
Oh. Yeah, but I'm gutted that you weren't involved with that because that sounds like so much rock and roll fun, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
I mean, John, if you were a rock star now, what would you be doing? Would you throw stuff out the TV out the window or would you drive your car into a pond?
No, it wouldn't be a TV. If I had to throw something out the window, it'd be a guitar, so watch that guitar behind you.
You'd throw a guitar through the window.
Yeah.
That's what you do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think.
Do you remember a band called Enjoy?
No.
They were managed by the same manager as the Prodigy.
Yeah.
They were an early rave band.
Yeah.
In the early 90s, and I was in the studio with them one time, two brothers.
Right.
They had a massive argument. One of them picks up this keyboard, big wooden sides on it, massive keyboard, picks it up, throws it right across the room with his brother.
No.
I ducked down, he went right over my head. Smashed against the wall. His brother just moved out of the way and it just smashed against the wall. Luckily, it missed the mixing desk and didn't damage any of their keyboard. It didn't damage any of our gear, and luckily, he just scratched the floor.
I think the most rock and roll I ever got, George, was with my old Rocky Oaky band. When we used to go out and gig, and occasionally we'd do the odd charity gig.
Yeah.
And people would say to us, you know, our reputation would precede us. And they'd say, oh, it's for charity, can you do us a gig? And we'd go, yeah, we'll play for beer. And they go, no, we'd rather pay you because we know what your beer about your bar tab's like. So we used to end up getting paid.
So did they pay you and not give you beer?
Yeah, they wouldn't give us beer because they just knew it cost us more money.
Cost us more money to pay
beer. You know, out of all the artists that you've worked with, who's been the biggest diva?
The name and shame now is. Absolute divas. He's having time to think about it here.
Not many.
Yeah.
No.
So most people are all right. Most people are all right. The worst experience I had was he was a comedian. I used to do a spitting image, a TV show. I used to do her sessions every week. I can't remember what she was called now. She was an English female comedian.
Yeah.
Like quite upper class, middle class. She was like just treating everyone like shit. Like, get this for me, get this. Like, treated you like you were like her personal servant.
Whoa.
that most people are all right. When they come into the studio, they leave their ego at the door and they're just normal people.
Yeah, yeah.
You worked with Beverly Knight, didn't you?
Yeah, Beverly was great.
What's she like?
She was brilliant. She was brilliant. She was young then. It was her first album.
Yeah.
And she was a total pro. She had a voice like you wouldn't believe. You knew immediately she was going places.
She's huge now, isn't she? Yeah. She's big in the West End.
She sang with Stevie Wonder, didn't she? She went to LA and she did. She had a massive career, then she came back and had a bit of a break and had kids and stuff, and then now she's on a second career, really. She got to the West End, didn't she? That's what resurrected her again.
So from what you were saying before, what George was asking about various people that you work with, whatever, out of everybody on the scene now, Dave, especially like new or old, is there anybody that you think, oh, wish I'd love to work with someone like that? Is there anybody that stands out?
Old Pink Floyd.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Led Zeppelin or Bob Marley.
One of the bigs.
Any of those.
Yeah. I think I would have gone for... If I was a producer and I got to work with someone like that, I'd probably say Beatles.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
To be around when the Beatles were starting out, I think that'd be pretty cool.
And they invented everything the Beatles did. It was different times then, though. I'm not sure I would have liked to be a sound engineer in the Beatles, the era. Because they all wore suits and had to be like, they were the boffins, they weren't.
But the sound engineers were experimenting, weren't they? Yeah, they must have been doing a lot of experimenting.
They were in lab coats and suits. I'd rather have been a sound engineer in the 70s.
I think you'd look cool in a lab coat, wouldn't you? You'd look like a mad professor.
Electric Ladyland in the 70s, that would have been my ideal job.
Yeah, yeah. Or like if you wore something like what they wore in the Blues Brothers.
I don't want the suits, me.
No. Suit, pork pie hat and all that, my life.
Yeah.
So Jordan's latest favourite band. You're into a lot of music, aren't you, at the moment? But he's going mad for the Jam at the moment, Dave. Yeah. And we've touched on this, haven't we, before ourselves? Yeah,
he's touched on it in many different situations.
They're great band.
Yeah.
But I'm not a big Jam fan. I was a rocker, not a mod.
who did you like then, The Who?
No, well, The Who were confusing, weren't they? Because The Who were a rock band, but all the mods liked them.
Yeah.
But he had long hair. And I got into The Who when I first saw them at Woodstock.
Yeah.
That's the first time I came across The Who. I saw the Woodstock video, Summertime Blues, and I loved them. And then I found out they were a mod band, and I wasn't allowed to like them in those days because you had to be a mod or a rocker. You couldn't like The Who.
More, you had to, like, pick a side, like.
Yeah, so I was into AC/DC, Status Quo, and
Led Zeppelin, whatever.
Led Zeppelin, and Rainbow, and Deep Purple, and all those rock 70s rock bands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the Jam came along, and they were all like ex-punks or post-punk. So they all had short hair, they all wore shoes, and they all wore dressed smartly. But rockers always wore jeans with denim jackets and patches on them and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Had long hair.
Yeah, it's John, the bit you're missing is that you couldn't be a mod and a rocker because mods were on mopeds and rockers were on motorbikes.
Yeah. Well, I
and it was standard procedures to beat the shit out of each other.
But that was still going on in the early 80s when I was growing up, but that was still going on.
Well, I couldn't be on either because I can't see and I can't drive. So
looking back, I like a few Jam songs, but I don't love them.
Dave, how do you feel about the Oasis reunion and all that coming up then? What do you reckon the odds are of it actually happening?
It'll happen.
You think it will?
Too much money to stay for it not to now.
I was saying to Jordan on the way up in the van today that, and you're probably going to just go mad at me saying this, but I generally believe if there was ever a window for the Jam to do a reunion, it would probably be over this next couple of years. In light of people like Oasis. What do you think?
They won't do it, though.
No, won't do it.
They'll never do it, will they?
But if it was going to happen, I think it would happen now.
Yeah, if it was to happen. It should have happened a few years back, though, if it was going to happen. I think they've left it too late now.
But there's going to be a few bands jumping on that wagon
now,
isn't there?
They're all too old. The Jam, the band themselves, are all too old to do it justice.
Who would you like to see come back?
They were kids, weren't they, then? I don't know. I'm not a big fan of old rock stars coming back. I like people who died, I'd like to see them come back, who could come back young again, you know what I mean? Who come back in the prime. Even Zeppelin, though, like one of my favourite bands, when Zeppelin did those O2 gigs, I hated it.
Mm.
They were horrible. I can't watch it, I can't listen to it, because they were all put down a semitone so he could sing it.
Did you like Queen?
Yeah, saw Queen a couple of times.
Yeah.
I went to the big gig at Wembley.
Yeah.
Famous gig. I saw that. It was on telly again. The other night.
Five, wasn't it?
I was right out of the front row. 85 was Live Aid, wasn't it? So it was the year after Live Aid.
Oh, yeah, 86.
Yeah, 86. And the reason I went to watch that is because that was INXS's first gig in the UK.
Nice.
They were supporting Queen at Wembley. And that's what I'd been to see Queen a few months before at the NEC.
Yeah.
And all my mates were like, "You coming to Wembley to see Queen?" I was like, "I saw them last month, I'm not bothered really." And then INXS was supporting, like, "Yeah, I'll come because I want to see INXS."
Can you remember how much your ticket was?
About 20 quid.
Wow.
Wasn't much more, it was 15 or 20 quid probably.
Yeah. Ticket prices these days compared to what you. Yeah. They're a joke, aren't they?
Yeah. No, the whole of Oasis ticket pricing, the dynamic pricing, I think they should have refunded all the fans. And anyone who paid over face value should get a refund.
What is that, dynamic pricing? What?
No, the more people in the queue for the tickets, the more expensive the tickets get. So the prices, even though it's got a face value, face value means nothing.
No.
It's on demand, the price goes up on demand.
That's naughty, that.
Which is not right, it's not fair. But it's yeah...
I bought two tickets for Wembley a couple of weeks ago to see McCartney down at the O2 Arena, sorry.
Right, you don't go to the Co-op? I think you were at the Co-op.
Yeah, no, I couldn't get tickets for the Co-op.
All right, so the O2, was it?
Well, right, I tried getting passes.
Saw the picture.
Yeah. So I ended up...
But did you see Ringo come on stage then?
Yeah, yeah.
You were there that night?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I was there, yeah.
Yeah, that was the night to be at.
Yeah, oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah. But the thing was, what was really interesting, I was there with my daughter Charlotte, and we're watching, and we're literally at the side of the stage in the wings. Yeah. And he says, "Oh, I've got a special treat for you." And I'd already said to Charlotte that because it's the last night of the tour, they're probably going to bring guests out. Yeah. That's what happens. You know, yeah, it's London, it's O2.
Yeah, yeah.
So he says, "Oh, I've got a special guest for you." And he brought out Ronnie Wood, Stones. Right. Yeah, so I'm like, "Oh, Ronnie Wood." So he comes out and he played Get Back. Then I watched him wheeling out a drum kit. And he's like, "Oh, we've got another special guest." And my daughter's going, "It'll be Ringo." And I'm like, "Don't talk rubbish, it'll be Dave Grohl." Thinking, you know,
he turns up for everything.
Logical, Dave Grohl. No, Ringo.
Oh, yeah.
So I've seen Ringo and McCartney live on stage. Yeah. So that was cool.
I saw Ringo at Glastonbury. He come up and he got up on stage at Glastonbury with him. When McCartney played Glastonbury years back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ringo got up that night, so I've seen it.
He can't play. I don't care what anybody says. He's shy. Never...
But you've recently been to a gig and you've got a grievance for this gig because you said, was it Bruce Springsteen, and you said it was absolutely awful because you could see nothing?
Yeah, it wasn't a great gig at all. I was quite disappointed.
I don't like those big arena gigs.
It was too big, Dave.
You can't see anything.
It was, like, too big. And do you know what? I don't understand. It's like... Wembley, the new Wembley Arena is big, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but it's like, why have they not got tiered flooring? Even just a slight tier.
It's a football pitch. It's got to be flat.
Yeah, but they cover it with something.
Yeah, they could put tiers in, couldn't they?
But you know what really bugged me from a production point of view is that the crew that built the stage for Bruce Springsteen, they built it at literally like 3 metre.
Right. So
like, if you put it at 4.
Yeah, everyone would be able to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awful.
Yeah.
Well, not a great gig. Go on, John.
I went to Roger Waters at the arena, and it was brilliant because he was in the round, he was in the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, the crowd, and he walked around every bit of the stage, so part of the gig he was in front of you.
Yeah.
Some of the gig he had it back to you, but some of it you were like, you were at the front, it was brilliant.
Yeah, I saw Coldplay, stage out in the middle, amazing. Yeah. Ed Sheeran, that last tour he did. Great little gig.
Little Ed on his own on a stage with no band.
Have you ever been involved...
Oh, no, he had a band!
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Have you ever been involved with anyone like that, like the Ed Sheeran, Coldplay or anything like that?
No, Prodigy, the biggest band I've been involved with.
That's as big as you can get, though. It's pretty big, though, isn't it?
I used to do the TV sound whenever they did a festival.
Yeah.
I was in a truck at the back of the stage doing the TV mix.
Oh, so you've done places like Glastonbury and places?
Yeah. I did Glastonbury, Tea in the Park, V Festival, all the UK festivals.
Yeah.
For about 2 years after the Invaders Must Die album came out, so like 2016, 17.
Yeah.
Around that time, whenever they played a UK festival, they had me in the truck at the back doing the sound.
Whoa. So going back to your career, I've got to ask, what's been one of your proudest achievements?
Superstarling. Well, my proudest achievement is my current album, getting 200,000 streams on my current album when I'm 57 years old, and I've just released my first solo album.
Yeah.
And I've got 200,000 streams on it.
What's it called?
It's a good question.
He's looking around there going, what's it called? Hang on, should we cut
Cinematic Dreams. Cinematic Dreams.
Should we ask him again for the edit?
Yeah.
Cinematic Dreams available now on Newman Records.
Hang on, no, let's do that again now.
The album's out now.
Go on, George, ask the question again.
So, Dave, what's been your proudest achievement?
Probably my new album that I've written, produced, mixed, and recorded all on my own.
What's it called, Dave?
Oh, no.
It's called Cinematic Dreams. It's out now on all major platforms. Hey! Dave Pemberton on Spotify.
Yeah, go download, people.
Just look for my bald head.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I was going to ask you, out of all the albums you've worked on, yeah, which is the best one?
Goodbye Country, Hello Nightclub by Groove Armada.
Yeah?
Great band.
Either that or The All Together by Orbital. Both did around about the same sort of time, same year, both those albums, I think, and it was a bit of a peak time I was getting.
And Groove Armada, were they... They're DJs, aren't they?
Yeah, but they were a band. They're a band more, primarily.
Right.
Two guys.
Yeah.
And they've stopped playing live now, which is probably why you know them as DJs. They were a full live band up until about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
They stopped doing the live band touring, and now they just tour as DJs.
Yeah.
Because they're getting on a bit. And it's 20, more than 20 years now. It's 2002 Superstylin, I think.
Yeah.
22 years ago now, 23 years ago. I got nominated for a Grammy for that. It was nominated for the best dance mix. So I didn't win it.
No, but you've been nominated. That's pretty cool.
Kylie won it for Can't Get You Out of My Head.
Have you ever been to any award ceremonies like that, the Grammys?
Yeah.
No? That's pretty cool, though, isn't it? So
it's cool to be nominated.
But you got beat by Kylie.
They said I could go to the Grammys, I could have a ticket, but I'd have to get my own flight and hotel.
So
I phoned the band up and said, are you going to the Grammys? And they were like, no, we haven't won it. They knew already they hadn't won it.
Oh.
So I was like, oh, I'm not going, you're not going.
That'd have been cool, though.
Oh. If the band had been going, I would have paid me on flight.
Yeah.
The band had been going, but they weren't, so I thought, I'm not going on my own.
I've got a question for you, Dave. Regarding technology, if you, going back to when you first started, and we both know about all the gadgets that are available to the industry now, the event industry, and recording, would you prefer to record back in the day or record in today?
Yeah. Everything sounds much better now. The quality of the gear is much better now. And even in the box, digital recording, everything's better now. Everything sounds better.
So you're not listening to vinyl then?
Nah. I like vinyl. I like the physicality of it. I like the tactile and having it in your hand and all that stuff, but it sounds awful.
I have boxes and boxes of it.
It doesn't sound great. No. It sounds okay if you've got a high-end player and a good system to play it on and a good room and all the rest of it, but you need to spend a few grand on a system.
Mm-hmm.
And then you need a whole room to keep your collection in.
You've got a vinyl collection going on at the moment, haven't you?
Yeah.
Well, I've got every record I've ever worked on and every record I've ever liked on my phone. In top quality, with no crackles and no surface noise and no having to get up out of your chair to turn it over halfway
through. That's what people, that's what vinyl, for me, that's what people like about vinyl. That's what they admire. They admire the old getting up and changing the record.
I remember vinyl. I remember sitting there with a lot of lads in a room, clouds of smoke everywhere, and the vinyl just going... Everyone looking at each other saying, he's going to get up and turn the record over. I'm not getting up. And he'll just be there for about half an hour.
Yeah, but, you know...
Before someone to get out of the chair and turn it over.
But there's two things I miss about vinyl. One is having... putting a 10p piece on the needle.
Yeah.
I miss doing that. But the other thing is sitting and being able to read the sleeves.
That's what I miss.
Yeah.
Is being able to read the sleeve notes.
Yeah.
And to have that cover and the artwork in your hands.
Yeah.
And all the lyrics and all the rest of it and listening to it for the first time.
Yeah.
That's what was good about it.
Yeah. And that and also looking for the secret messages.
Yeah.
By playing stuff
trying to
backwards.
Play
it
backwards.
Yeah. I don't understand that. How would you play a vinyl backwards? I don't understand
you
that.
You put the needle on it, then you use your finger and just moved it round and slowly.
Turn it backwards.
To about the right speed.
Yeah.
Just kept moving it backwards, and then you can hear all these satanic messages that they put in there.
John, play later on when you're at home and you play whatever album, play it backwards and you'll hear, kill Jordan, kill Jordan.
I've just got one final question for you, Dave.
Go on.
Have you got Amanda Holden's number in your phone book?
Yeah, I'll set. 07985206443. You got that?
No.
Hey, well done, Joss. Nice.
Yeah.
Crack of that.
I just wish he had had Amanda Holden's number. Because I thought I was in there.
Hang on, that wasn't a number. I'm just making a note. Oh, we're dialing that,
man. I know. He's let us down, hasn't he?
Great interview, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah, really enjoyed that.
I really enjoyed that as well.
Good day out, wasn't it?
Yeah. We'll have to go back down, though, to get a photo opportunity, will we?
Yeah, it's a shame we didn't think of that bit. Yeah. You need to speak to your PA, your assistant.
Aye.
So, is there anything you regret about that? Apart from the photographic opportunity, is there anything you wish you'd have asked, you know?
No, no.
Or are you pleased?
No, not really. I'm really pleased for it. With it, I just think I'm really, really doing it properly now to my ability. So I feel like I'm getting better every time with each one I do.
And what did you learn from that interview that you will take into the next interview? Any skills? Any thoughts?
I've learned that I can be more relaxed, and I feel like I've got to a point now where before an interview I'm not going to be like jumping like all jumping, like what am I going to say, I'll forget this, I'll forget that. But no, I think I'm all right.
Who's next on your hit list, Jod?
I haven't got a clue.
We need to find someone.
But as I've said through some episodes, I have got a person to get to this year, Tom Syndicate, which I put up a post about a few weeks ago, so people will know that.
Well, let's chase him up. Maybe he's our next on the hit list.
Aye, and I think with that, we'll say goodbye.
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 The podcast that follows a dream with Jordan Anderson. A Positive Media Company production. Visit positivemedia.org.uk.